To make switching to the new Boost Mobile risk-free, we're offering a 30-day money-back guarantee.
So why wouldn't you switch from Verizon or T-Mobile?
Because you have nothing to lose. Boost Mobile is offering a 30-day money-back guarantee.
No, I asked why wouldn't you switch from Verizon or T-Mobile?
Oh.
Wouldn't.
Because you love wasting money as a way to punish yourself because your mother never showed you enough love as a child?
Whoa. Easy there.
Yeah.
Applies to online activations. Requires port in and auto pay. Customers activating in stores may be charged non-refundable activation fees.
Decisions, decisions.
Wait a minute. Are you still looking for cars on Carvana?
Yeah. Decisions, decisions.
When I use Carvana, I found the exact car I was looking for in minutes. Bought it on the spot.
Electric or full diesel? Decisions.
Come on, you've been at it for weeks. Just buy it already.
You're right. Crossover it is. Decisions decided.
Whether you know exactly what you want or like to take your time, buy your car the convenient way with Carvana.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Are you a professional pillow fighter or a 9-to-5 low-cost time travel agent? Or maybe real estate sales on Mars is your profession? It doesn't matter. Whatever it is you do, however complex or intricate, Monday.com can help you organize, orchestrate, and make it more efficient. Monday.com is the one centralized platform for everything work-related. And with Monday.com, work is just easier. Monday.com, for whatever you run. Go to Monday.com to learn more.
Hey, Alarmy. Check out Alarmist on Patreon for ad-free episodes and bonus content.
I think everyone should. Challenged and encouraged you.
Yes.
Challenged to and encouraged.
A yes. book.
And so we said, let's do it together.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And through the, you know, the power of like collective action and human support and like yes. support systems, so, you know, community and uh-huh. love, we
a
are
book club
here
was
now.
Born.
And a book club was born yes. and I read a book.
Yay! Let's just take a moment yeah. to give you a huge round of applause, Chris.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're discussing Sophie's Choice. Here's what you need to know.
Sophie. How can anyone imagine that he knows her? Beyond the innocent, the romantic, the sensual, and the unthinkable, there are secrets we have yet to imagine. One of them is Sophie's Choice.
The film opens when Stingo, a young aspiring novelist, arrives in Brooklyn in 1947, seeking to complete his first novel and launch his career. He rents a room in a boarding house where he meets the enigmatic couple, Sophie, a beautiful and fragile Polish immigrant, and Nathan, an eccentric biologist with extreme mood swings. Despite Nathan's volatile nature, the two seem deeply in love and they form an immediate friendship with Stingo, who is drawn into their world. However, as time progresses, the cracks in Sophie and Nathan's relationship become evident. Nathan's behavior grows increasingly erratic, oscillating between romantic affection and terrifying rage.
Tell me why.
Explanation, please!
fueled by his paranoid delusions of Sophie's infidelity. The dynamic between the two becomes more clear when Stingo learns that Nathan helped Sophie when she arrived in America. Sophie also shares details of her life in Poland before and during World War II, which we see in flashbacks. Sophie's father was a professor in Krakow and a fierce anti-Semite who was eventually captured and killed by the Nazis. Sophie worshipped her father until she came to understand the depravity of his beliefs. Although she was married, she took a lover, a man named Josef, who was a part of Nazi resistance, but she did not have the courage to join him in the fight. Josef was killed and Sophie was forced into a concentration camp. She tells Stingo her son went to a children's concentration camp and her daughter was put to death. Because of her education, she became a secretary to a high officer named Haas. She begged him to let her son join a program which would release him from the camp, and Haas agreed but didn't follow through. By revealing this history, Sophie finds solace in Stingo's kindness and they share a kiss. Stingo learns from Nathan's brother that Nathan is not, as he claims, a brilliant biologist working on a cure for disease, but rather a man with severe mental health issues who has been in and out of treatment his entire life. Stingo's concern for Sophie grows, and tensions escalate when Nathan's jealousy and paranoia reach a breaking point, and he gets his hands on a firearm and threatens to kill them both. Sophie and Stingo flee, seeking refuge in a hotel in Washington, D.C. Stingo confesses his love to Sophie and has plans to get married and settled in Virginia. Sophie is hesitant about marriage but agrees to go. She finally opens up to Stingo about the full extent of her trauma, something she's never told anybody, a horrific choice she was forced to make in Auschwitz. When Sophie had first arrived at the concentration camp, she was confronted by a Nazi officer who forced her to make an impossible choice. One of her children would be sent to the gas chamber, and she must decide which one. If she refused to choose, both would be killed. In a moment of sheer agony, Sophie chose to save her son John, sacrificing her daughter Ava. After she tells her story, in a moment of desperation and mutual vulnerability, Sophie and Stingo sleep together. The next day, Stingo wakes to find a letter from Sophie explaining she needs to go back to be with Nathan. When Stingo arrives at the boarding house in Brooklyn, he discovers that Sophie and Nathan have died by suicide, ending their tumultuous relationship in a final, fatal act. The film closes after Stingo reads a passage from Emily Dickinson's poetry, contemplating the complexities of human suffering and the impossible choices people are sometimes forced to make. Fun Facts, aka Death Stats. Meryl Streep spent months learning Polish and spoke with her accent both on and off screen throughout filming. In the film, three people are shown to have died as a result of the tragedy: Ava, Sophie's beloved daughter, Nathan, and Sophie herself. However, millions died in the actual Holocaust, 6 million people of which were of European Jewish descent. Sophie's Choice is Kevin Kline's first film. For her portrayal of Sophie, Meryl Streep won the 1983 Academy Award for Best Actress in a Leading Role, her first win in the category. To date, she has since received more Academy Award nominations than any other actor in history. Today we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
And of course, our very special guest is my dear friend, writer director Hannah Utt. Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
We are so excited to have you on the show.
Nice. Hi.
I'm
yeah.
So excited to be on the show. I really just took your lead. I was like, oh, I'm only saying hi. Got it.
That's what we do here.
You pick up so quick. So I before we even start, I just want to tell our listeners to run over wherever you watch movies on demand and check out Hannah's latest film that she directed, Cora Bora. Hannah, tell our listeners a little bit about the movie and what they can expect.
Well, it's a movie starring Megan Stalter, who's a very funny lady, and it's her first leading role. And I get, when I'm describing the movie to people, I say, which I am doing right now.
yeah, what do you say? Yeah.
Well, I say, this is me describing my movie.
Right. Very meta.
It's kind of about that friend. It's like that person that you, all your other friends are like, why are you still friends with that person? But they just hold a really like special place in your heart, and you maybe understand why they do the things that they do in a deeper way than most people. And it's a comedy, and it's super queer, and it's also got sort of a big heart underneath.
Yeah. Yeah. And we absolutely recommend. So run. Don't walk, run.
Hey, and now might be a good time to tell you guys that Clayton, you're our Cora Bora.
Oh, guys.
You're that friend.
I wasn't prepared for this. You can't do that to me. That's really, really sweet.
You're that. I'm take just it as a that compliment. Friend.
Yes, that's a very Cora move. Cora would take
us. So okay. Before we get started, I know I keep saying before we get started, but we like to start off the show by asking our guests, Hannah, what is something that's recently alarming you? What's something that's keeping you up at night?
Palestine. There's a rash on my son's foot I think he just got from a pair of shoes. There was like a seam that was rubbing, but it's just not going away. And so at the end of every day, as I'm falling asleep, you know how your mind just sort of attaches to whatever the like closest anxiety is? I imagine a new thing that rash could be every night. and I'm not going to call the pediatrician, okay? I'm going to keep that.
It will clear itself up.
You're saving up that copay. You don't want to.
That's what's been alarming me lately, but it seems better today. So.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, that's hopeful.
Yeah. Have you considered cutting it off?
Yeah, of course I have. What kind of mother I am?
Before he spreads, obviously.
He has another one, I presume, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, he did lose that one to...
Wow. It was another rash. Another rash.
Yeah. What's going on over there?
If it's his last one, then I would, maybe consider trying to...
I do recommend calling the pediatrician for sure. Before we make any decisions here on the podcast, we have to transition. And okay, so for the record, I had never seen Sophie's Choice. Okay. All of the years I've been using the reference, and I did know it had to do with children, but I didn't know the extent of the tragedy behind this movie. I didn't even know, like, I honestly didn't know what it was about. I think a few of us have watched it for the first time.
Yeah. I watched it last night for many years. Did you know? Yeah. I think I've even like used that casually in that like, well, it's a real Sophie's Choice, right?
Right.
But as have I.
I kind of like was guessing what the choice was. And then it comes so late in the movie. I spent a lot of the movie being like, oh, I think I've been getting this wrong for many years. She's choosing between these two men. She's choosing whether or not to take the radio. She's choosing whether or not.
That's a very different story.
Very different. But I also for many years got it confused with Citizen Ruth. Do you guys know that movie?
No.
Please tell us what the confusion was.
It's a Laura Dern comedy. About like a paint huffer, like a horrible woman.
Oh no!
She gets pregnant and becomes like the center of this debate around abortion. It's a very funny movie. Also about choice.
Okay.
Oh.
But anyway, I went into it like really confused. And so what a fun surprise that movie was last night.
Yes, yes. Full of surprises, twists and turns. It was my first time watching the film as well, Clayton.
I've seen it a couple of times, but I actually rewatched it like last year. And it's just one of those things you're like, you have to really commit to it because it's 2.5 hours.
Yes, it's very
and like,
long.
It's like a little like, you know, it's, you kind of sit with the character, you know, it's not, the pacing is not, you're in it. There's long scenes of dialogue, you know, you got to like really have your attention there.
But it's a novel. A lot of PDA, a lot of cuddling and sort of nuzzling and grabbing.
You're right. I have a question. I want to know, so like, just for clarity, what are we decide? Like, who's to blame for what? You know what I mean? Like, for the choice, for their death at the end, like the, for what?
Oh yeah, like, or are we talking about like who's to blame for making the movie? Who's to blame for the wigs?
Right.
All great questions. I guess initially I had thought about the death at the end, but we could also make it about the choice.
Right. Which I feel does, like is a clear. That's kind of like pretty clear.
That feels pretty clear. So maybe we make it about the death at the end.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Like, who's to blame for
the tragic ultimate, events that,
their demise?
For their decision to poison themselves, which we don't know. We know that Nathan got the cyanide, or we assume, from his lab or his access to the lab.
Right.
But, and we know he had, you know, this obviously, like, he had this paranoid schizophrenia, but we don't know whose idea it was to sort of do a joint suicide. I guess we assume they both did that.
But it could have been a murder suicide.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
We would probably have the answers to this if we read the book. But you know how he says we're dying? It could be. There's no indication of this in the movie. Outside of the sort of overwhelming paternalism that sort of permeates the whole thing, which I think is actually just a product of it being made in 82 or whatever. But it could be like a Munchausen by proxy situation where he's been slowly poisoning her the whole time.
That is so interesting, Hannah. That line really stuck with me. When he tells her, do you remember if it's like in the middle of a fight that is, he's just like, we're dying. And I thought that, when he says it, that made me think that the rest of the movie, and maybe this is again, because I had so much time to sit with it, was that she was like terminally ill and had gotten, sick from, had some illness she had gotten from being in the concentration camp. And it was like with her.
Yeah, same. But I thought they like both had like tuberculosis or AIDS or something.
Right.
Their new friend was also going to get it.
Oh, my. Well, because of the PDA. There's a lot of PDA. Yeah.
That's the very like literal clinical version. But there's all you could just say like they were dying. They were just like two broken hearts.
Broken souls. People. I mean, and are we all dying?
We are.
Yeah, they were they were both definitely suffering.
Yeah.
And yes, aren't we all dying? I think that I want to go back to the paternalism comment that you made, Hannah, because I think that was like that's something that I kept noticing as well, was that every man she came across, and is this what you're sort of referring to, every man she came across wanted her in some way, wanted something from her. But because of the time it was made, I think that was a theme to me about like sex, love, you know, and you know, this writer who's a virgin, who is so desperately wanting to like have sex for the first time, but like, you know, and then this woman and how these sort of the world, every man she comes across like wants her, in some way, or wants to use her in some way, and her body in some way. And that how that culminates with their relationship. I think it was all part of the design of the sort of theme, but
yeah,
that's interesting.
We can kind of get into that.
I in that scene where I believe it's their he, the
Who's
writer
he?
Takes
Stingo.
Stingo takes Sophie to away after they have that very, you know, that we know that he has a gun, that Nathan has a gun, and it's they had the biggest fight, and they're in that hotel, and he tells her he's going to take her to Virginia to the farm. And I remember while I was watching the movie thinking, wow, no one's asking her what she wants to do. He's just like, now we're going to go to the farm, you know. And before that, he does Nathan would come in and be like, or Sophie will come in and say, Nathan ordered me to take you to the movies, you know. So she doesn't have a lot of choice except for this one horrific choice.
She vowed to never make a choice again.
Oh wow.
No.
Maybe she made one final choice in the end too, so she didn't have to.
Yeah. Well, your choice. And well, it was also fascinating that the choice she did make was an effort. She basically had to choose could a man or a woman exist in this world? And she she gave her daughter and she said, you know, I because of how hard the world has been to me, I couldn't possibly see a woman in this world. It's just too hard. So she gave her daughter.
Which is never made explicit. Right, like there's no unpacking the choice. The choice, it doesn't even feel like a choice that happened so quickly. Like it. I went on like an actual genocide spiral. Also, having a kid, you're just like, I spent the last half hour of the movie with my phone up, just scrolling through pictures of my son.
Oh my god.
I can't imagine what it was like watching this movie and having had a child. It's just
with a rash on his foot is one
with
remaining
a rash on his foot. Good lord. So should we put up on the board,
let's get some stuff on the board.
Should we start just by putting the Third Reich and Hitler up on the board?
I think that's a good start.
Sure.
The Nazis.
Well, and Hitler's mother, of course, because it always comes down to the mother.
Yeah.
It's her fault. It was her fault in the first place.
We gotta put Rudolf Hoss, obviously. He's the obvious one. He is the one who I couldn't tell if it was the same guy, if it was Haas, who she worked for, who made her make the choice. Was that a different general?
I think that was a different guard, but I will double check that.
Right. So in the movie, it's Haas. But is it Hess?
Oh, maybe
is it Rudolf Hess? That's the I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Are we Hess? So
I see Hoess or
Hoss.
The O has a an umlaut, I believe. H with the umlaut under above the O.
Gotcha.
Hey, true crime fans. Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. After all, ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/adfreetruecrime. That's amazon.com/adfreetruecrime to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now trending? Fall. And DSW's here with all the obsession-worthy shoe trends you need in your closet. Feeling fierce? DSW's got bold snake print boots and a retro sneaker with animal print details. Going for demure? Kitten heels are the eye-catching yet walkable heel all over your feet and all over DSW. From edgy moto boots to sweetly simple ballet flats, find the must-own shoe trends of the season right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So let's put the Nazis.
Yep.
We should put Hitler up on the board. Mm-hmm. And of course, we should also put anti-Semitism up on the board. This is an excerpt from Real Views online. One flashback, however, helps us understand, but there's a dark side to Sophie's history. The father she loved and adored was an ardent anti-Semite, who delivered a speech about Poland's Jewish problem, quote, and agreed with Hitler's final solution of extermination. In an act of bittersweet irony, Sophie's father was executed by the Nazis, and she ended up in a concentration camp. There, she was forced to surrender her daughter to a crematorium in exchange for her son's life. This act, coupled with an uncertainty about her son's fate, has haunted her and spread a stain of self-loathing on her soul. This is from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. Many Germans were willing to tolerate Nazi anti-Semitism. Germany suffered a humiliating defeat in World War I. Many believed the Nazi Party was restoring Germany's status as a world power. The Nazis also promised to restore Germany's economy. They vowed to end political instability and violence. The Holocaust could not have happened without the active or passive participation of millions of people. Some people recognized that they could personally benefit from the persecution and murder of Jews. They acquired the property or homes of Jews who were deported and murdered. Some took over the businesses of Jews forced to emigrate or sent to concentration camps. Other people found jobs in the Nazi regime. These jobs gave them money, political power, and influence. In countries that Germany invaded, many collaborators saw the benefit of assisting their new leaders. They chose to denounce their Jewish neighbors.
You know what I started reading after this, watching Sophie's Choice, was Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, in which he describes the experience of going into a concentration camp. And he talks about the phases of like human behavior, the first being shock.
Sure.
I just think with this event is so unthinkable, and the way that this excerpt sort of describes it, it's like you are faced with this choice of like turning on your neighbors or facing death.
Right. The trauma is so intense.
It's just so unthinkable. Like I can't even, it's just unimaginable. It's just, I just haven't lived a life that I could possibly imagine.
I think we should reflect that on the board. Like somewhere, Rebecca, you're reading like that someone used the word haunting, like something about like these memories affecting Sophie's ability to like really be fully thriving as a human after all of this. You know, it's like she's with this guy, Nathan, who has his own problems, and like she can hardly be there for herself, let alone for someone who's like struggling with his own.
Well, I thought, I thought it was so powerful that the only man who she really, I mean, she goes back to Nathan in the end, and she has this guy Stingo, who's devoted to her, who is this innocent figure, pure in love with her, and all these other men. But the only man that she wants to be with is a man who is so far removed from, you know, being able to sort of like being rational, right? Mm-hmm. He's a person who is extreme highs and then has these extreme lows of abuse and vitriol that it's the only thing, like, it, to me, it makes somehow perfect sense. Like, she can only live in a reality that is altered in some way, like it is for him.
He's also because, like, his bad moods are like a manifestation of her self-loathing also.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Let's put that on the board. Self-loathing. I think that's good.
Yeah.
It also makes me think that, like, the chaos of Nathan is a distraction for Sophie and her, just her quiet thoughts.
I would say passivity too. I mean, it's like a huge part of how apartheid happens, and it's pretty integral to her character. And the word choice is in the title of the movie. And
there is that scene, sorry to but just to sort of support your argument, there is a scene where she's offered on two occasions like help with the resistance, once with this lover Joseph, and she's unable to do it out of obviously fear for her, you know, losing her children, and in the other situation is when she's the secretary and the you know,
the radio
the radio, stealing the radio, which she,
the first, like, one is typing her dad's speeches.
Oh,
that too. Yeah, that's true.
So
too.
She doesn't make a choice until she has to make that final choice. And it's interesting that when the reason she gives Yosef's sister, who was asking her to be part of the underground
resistance,
the reason she says that she doesn't want to do it is because she's afraid for her children,
right?
Which is the big, you know,
irony
of the movie. That's what she loses in the end, and that's the biggest choice she has to make. So had she made these choices along the way, maybe she wouldn't have had to make that final
so maybe that, like, choice, like guilt or regrets kind of like informing your decisions.
Guilt, fear,
guilt is huge.
Survivor guilt too.
Survivor's fear. Guilt, yeah, that's good.
I forgot
the effects of the Holocaust, just the lingering trauma, the PTSD that she felt or she had.
What were you saying, Hannah?
Oh, I just forgot that we're dealing with the suicide, possible murder, suicide at the end. That's
right. Yeah, I'm really trying to get into this, like, psychological mind frame of, like, how these two people, with everything that they're going through, decide to do that, to make that decision and to do it together. We're assuming that they, like, I guess that's the assumption, that it's not like a, you know, murder suicide, like this is like a joint choice that they made, right?
Right. Well, but then maybe we should also put Nathan's untreated mental illness up on the board. Sure. This is from a paper I found by Jen Chichester in academia.edu. All three main characters in William Styron's novel, Sophie's Choice, directly or indirectly face a deepened intermingling of grief and more pervasive mental health issues such as schizophrenia, depression, and the deadly symptom of suicidal ideation. While Sophie's option to commit suicide isn't the only shocking choice she makes in the novel, it's also astonishing for many readers that a Holocaust survivor commits suicide. However, what is sadly not baffling is that Nathan Landau, an American Jew who was unable to fight in World War II due to his madness, also commits suicide.
Nathan, who is unable to reach a catharsis of his personal grief and sense of loss throughout his life, expresses himself through extreme bouts of rage, often followed by sorrowful repentance for his actions without actually experiencing a therapeutic purging of emotions.
I mean, we could say like the state of psychiatry and psychology in the 40s.
That's true.
I like that. They all could have used some good mental health.
I don't think that was, you know, it's in, I can't imagine such a horrible, like something like the Holocaust, like such a global, like horrific event, like world event happening, and then all of the survivors, everyone involved, even those who were peripherally involved, not getting any kind of mental health support after it was over.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's like so common and still the case, right? Like, I feel like it's hard to even meet survivors' basic needs after stuff like this.
Right.
And mental health still, I don't know that it is even considered a basic need, unfortunately. But I have no idea because I don't work in that world.
No.
Oh, a lack of community.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, and I'm glad you said that. I felt like they were really
isolated.
I mean, it's the movie. Yeah, it was like just them. There was no one outside of it, and they were doing like, and it really felt like Nathan was kind of like leading the. It was like a little parade. You know, like he'd get on his little like manic episodes, and it was just like, we're doing the thing, you know? Like, where, even though they're adults, it didn't feel very adult.
Yeah.
No. Like, and it was really just the three of them. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, I guess you could say that's a, is that it technically a community?
No, I don't think so.
Not enough. Say
it's not.
Not when two of them are like broken. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
What was now, Stingo's deal? Did you guys get
that's a great question. I mean, I thought it was interesting that he came from the South.
I think that also where it kind of came into focus for me was when he was inviting Sophie down to live with him in a farm in South Virginia. And he was like, we have to get married because it's like a small town
it's very Christian.
He's so innocent.
And then it cuts to her explaining this scene with her and her kids. And the first thing the guard asks her is, or rather she says, I'm a Christian. Right. I believe in Christ. And then he cites the passage where it basically says Christ said, let the children come to me or something
suffer
like that.
Suffer the children unto me.
Suffer the children unto me. Right. Yeah. So I think that there's like here we're like asked to kind of compare these two things where it's like this idea of like conservatism rooted in Christianity of the South, where it's like you are sort of asked to conform, right? And sort of be married before sex. And then here you have like Christ being used as this horrific like weapon against this woman. And I think there's innocence involved in it there because like sex, he hasn't had sex, and then he doesn't want to be perceived to be with this woman living in a house without being in having been married. So I think we're asked to sort of draw that parallel there. It's like this weird innocence we have
about people
needing to be together in under the eye of God and like married in a Christian way before they can have sex. But like, what does that really mean? Like, do you really know someone if you are married in a church? Like, you know, it's sort of like this innocence thing happening.
This he feels very youthful.
Performance thing, but I also was like, you're a creep. That's a creepy thing to say.
Which
thing? We're gonna have to get married. That's just how it works there. It felt a little
interesting
coercive to me, especially given that we saw the scene with the other woman who could say fuck but couldn't do fuck.
Right.
You're like, you're kind of, I kind of get why you're a virgin. You're gross.
And I think that's where I was like, popped in my head, like, why is she not given a choice? Like, this is like, she can't even do things her way. She has to do it however the man, you know, they're, I thought that was a really interesting part. I kind of agree with you. And I think it was meant to be creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was intended.
I think it was more about innocence, honestly. I think
he innocently says that, but I think the idea is a creepy idea.
Well, I guess it just is like, what do you mean by creepy? Because to me, it's like, I feel like they're drawing a parallel, or they're saying like, in America, mm-hmm. In this like land of like, even though we have our own dark past, like we're so far removed from the horrors of this, like what this event was. I think, and ideas, the idea of sort of whatever, this like preserving a kind of innocence until you're ready to like get married under the in the church. Like that was just where he was like coming from.
But here's and I should rephrase that. I don't think he's innocent. I think he's naive. And I think that there's an important distinction between the two. Because for me, naivete can also mean like your lack. Like Hannah was saying, like a passivity.
Yeah.
To that idea and to that word, and that is a choice as well. I guess one could say.
Mm-hmm. Why do they have to go to the farm? Why can't they stay in New York? Like, what? How is marrying him her only option in his mind?
The naivety is, it's like he's not the right person to come in and help these two people. Like, mm-hmm. if someone were going to come in and be able to help them, he was too inexperienced and too, like, I guess, puritanical, like too passive. Like, he was like just kind of like an observer, and he was intoxicated by it, but I don't think he knew how to deal with it, so he just spoke of it.
I just feel like it was directed. But he always had his hands on her, even when she and Nathan were making out. He had like his hands on her hips.
Yes, it's so weird. Mm. But it feels like a strong directorial choice.
Yeah, I think it was like that was the choice. It was like I think he's a stand-in for the audience. Like the film is telling us, like, you couldn't possibly and none of us can possibly understand, like, we are like this guy Stingo. We are just like babes in the woods when we are asked to comprehend the horror of being in the situation that Sophie was in. Like, we just can't possibly understand
it. I don't know.
And I think that
I don't know, it felt like another layer of coercive control. Which is
like freedom, but not really. You have to like marry me. Like, you're not.
Yeah.
I'll take you away, but under these circumstances.
And sort of like how coercive control shows up in different aspects of our society.
I totally don't disagree with that. Like, I think that those two, in my mind, are like very intertwined here. Mm-hmm. Like, I think control, like Rebecca is saying, like, your naivete is like your choice. Right. And then for you to feel like you have the right to ask someone, say, to marry you or to live or save someone, which is what he was trying to do, is save this. Like, he was trying to like save her.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like it's.
But it was kind of centered
around
him.
A different form of control. And it was totally centered around him. Like, he wanted to be the one to like put out the fire or like help in some way. And it was naive, and it was a form of control because he couldn't possibly reckon with, you know, the kind of pain that she had.
I think it's tied to also like what the movie is saying about the Holocaust and like people being used as batteries and as fuel for other agendas. you know, like actual humans being used as the fuel that feeds the fire of power.
Right. Like, okay. It's like you lack a lack of agency or something, but yeah.
Yeah, like a stripping of humanity.
People as pawns. I'm trying to think of like a clever way to say it, but I know what you're saying.
What is that?
I think like people as collateral damage.
Sure.
For power, I think is right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, put that up on the board. People as
collateral
damage for power.
Okay.
I know it's specific.
These men get a sense of they feel powerful when they're able to take care of this broken woman.
Right. Yeah, I think we should put up on the board women, using women, like just that idea, which is, I think, part and parcel
sexism
of
then, or
sexism, patriarchy,
sexism. Sure, we can put it there. I think, but like what Hannah is saying, and what I think you guys are kind of angling towards too, is this idea of like dehumanizing others, but specifically dehumanizing women,
sure.
Right? Mm. Like her and her body were a huge part of the story. I think her beauty, like she was caught, like her, like the cut of her jaw, she was like told, she was always told how she looks, you know, always talked about how she looks. And like even the person on her side who was one of the other prisoners who was working in the house,
she's washing,
he was like, use your body, you're a woman, use your body. Like that was, you know. And so I think dehumanizing women is something that I think we should consider.
Okay.
It's putting up on the board. Yeah.
Like her having a lifetime of feeling that way.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much, right? I mean, we have to put her father up on the board.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Because I mean, she tells that story of him like telling her your brain is pulp, or or your
right
your intelligence is pulp.
Yeah. I feel like there's some, to me, it just goes back to how much guilt, like not really being aware of what her father was doing, and then realizing the guilt of having to make that awful choice. Mm-hmm. Like it just feels like she was so raw inside, like so torn up, like just so many. I just think like the
guilt of not having made choices until she had to make the choice. And she didn't make choices along the way, I guess, you know, and we can blame society.
Do we put the choice up on the board?
Not allowing. Yeah, we can put the choice. But I was saying we can blame society for not giving women the opportunity to make choices for themselves.
Sure.
Or to, you know, for creating a culture that teaches women not to make choices for themselves, which is patriarchy.
Sure. Put on the board.
But I think it is a tale of the dangers of passivity. And I think it's like, so it just strikes me as a very, what is the word I'm thinking of? It's just so of this time. Like, It's a warning sign.
Prescient.
Dangers.
It strikes.
Prescient.
Yes.
Prescient.
The dangers of passivity. Do you want to put that up on the board?
Sure.
Exploitation, I think, is the word that we were looking for earlier. Exploitation.
Exploitation.
Yes.
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 The dangers of passivity and exploitation.
Jeez.
How are we going to decide here? But we must.
Let's get on over there and figure it out.
Yeah, let's take a quick break and then we'll start knocking things off the board.
To get people excited about Boost Mobile's new nationwide 5G network, we're offering unlimited talk, text, and data for $25 a month.
Forever.
Even if you have a baby.
Even if your baby has a baby.
Even if you grow old and wrinkly and you start repeating yourself.
Even if you start repeating yourself.
Even if you're on your deathbed and you need to make one last call.
Or text.
Right, or text. The long-lost son you abandoned at birth.
You'll still get unlimited talk, text, and data for just $25 a month with Boost Mobile.
Forever! After 30 gigabytes, customers may experience slower speeds. Customers will pay $25 a month as long as they remain active on the Boost Unlimited plan.
Forever.
Nah, not quite.
What's up?
Sell my car on Carvana. It's just not quite the right time.
Crazy coincidence. I just sold my car to Carvana.
What? I told you about it 2 days ago.
When you know, you know. You know? I'm even dropping it off at one of those sweet car vending machines and getting paid today.
That's a good deal.
Oh, great deal. Come on. What's your heart saying?
You're right. When you know,
you know.
Sold.
Whether you're looking to sell your car right now or just whenever feels right, go to Carvana.com and sell your car the convenient way. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
Hey, true crime fans. Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. After all, ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/adfreetruecrime. That's amazon.com/adfreetruecrime to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, who's to blame for the demise of Sophie and Nathan in Sophie's Choice? Is it the Third Reich, Hitler, Hitler's mother, Nazis, Rudolf Hess, self-loathing, severe trauma, guilt, survivor's guilt, the effects of the Holocaust / PTSD, Nathan's untreated mental illness, grief, the state of psychology in 1940s America, isolation, people as collateral damage for power, sexism, dehumanizing women, Sophie's father, the choice, patriarchy, the dangers of passivity or exploitation. You know who's not on this board is Stingo.
I thought about
that. Okay with that?
Yeah. Because he might have aggravated the whole thing, you know?
He stirred it up in a way that.
She did keep telling him to not get involved.
And he kept getting involved.
He certainly did.
And he didn't do, he, you know what bothers me about Stingo is he never told Sophie the truth. The moment that Larry, brother, Nathan's brother, tells him that he suffers from schizophrenia and need and shouldn't be doing drugs and you know, because he says that he's doing cocaine and whatever and that he needs treatment, right? He never tells Sophie that her, this person that she's she then becomes engaged to him is sick and needs help,
right?
Yeah.
Do you think it would have made a difference? Like, do you think, I mean,
but
I guess
again, he doesn't make, he makes the choice to do nothing.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Do you think Sophie knows, though, instinctually, that there's something wrong with him? Like, I always kind of got the sense that she was like, that he's like damaged. Mm-hmm. Good.
She, you're saying she knows he's damaged.
Yeah, I feel like
that's what I think, too. Yeah. I think she's like, again.
Like, yeah, without being told outright, I think she's like, maybe that's why she's drawn to him.
Exactly.
Yes,
like, to him, like, you know, when she, if she lives in a world where this chaos is happening inside of her, like, he's an outward manifestation of that. He's the only one in the world she understands. There's also this idea,
but again, like Hannah said, he doesn't give her the choice. He makes the choice for her.
No, I was talking about Nathan.
Oh, Stingo. But regardless, I think that we should, I think that that's a big part of the movie. The fact that she is not, that people are making choices for her.
Right. No, I agree. Okay, we got to start knocking things off this board.
This is a heavy one, listeners. Let's take some stuff off the board or roll things into each other. Like self-loathing, these... trauma, guilt, survivor's
that
guilt.
Can fold,
What
do we fold it into?
Folds into guilt, right? Guilt. All forms of guilt. Okay. Yeah. And I feel like I'm not going to blame Hitler's mother.
No.
No, that was a joke. That was a joke.
Yeah, I know.
It's a joke. Hess just had an opportunity to save her son, or at least try to, but he never did, right? You know what I was trying to find out was who the guard was at the...
Who confronts her.
Who made her.
Who confronts her, but yeah. I can't find that character in either IMDb or in
Wikipedia. Are you sure it's not Rudolph Hess? I think it is
I know,
him.
It looks just like...
Is it him?
I think it's him.
That's the guard who later, who makes her
general.
Let's think.
I think we can get rid of some of the bigger ideas. Like, I think exploitation can get rolled into dehumanizing women. I think sexism as well. Like, I think dehumanizing. I think isolation is maybe a bit broad, as well as grief. I mean, I think it's a little bit broad.
Sure, but the grief, boy.
Oh,
like,
boy.
I feel like it's pretty profound.
Yeah.
For sure. I think you're proposing that we keep dehumanizing women, right?
Yeah, yes.
Oh, okay,
and then we fold exploitation into that.
Yeah, I was thinking exploitation.
Oh, God, if you think about it. I mean, I'm really leaning toward, I'm loving people as collateral damage for power and dangers of passivity. But if you think about it, none of this would have, I don't think any of this would have happened if women weren't so dehumanized.
Right.
I think if women had more power in general in society, I don't think that would have happened. They would not let that happen to babies.
Right. I mean, I do agree in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Well, in specific, you know, Sophie's sort of inability, right, to like face the world, right, okay, which is ultimately what we're looking at here, right?
True.
I think her life, she felt like she couldn't go on because of how,
right,
how she's been treated her whole life.
Now, do we think that Sophie had a choice? I know we keep going back to this question, but is that the point of the movie? Is it the point that there is no choice.
Right.
Even in that choice that we say it was the choice.
Right.
When we say the choice, we know what we're talking about. But was that a choice?
I mean,
because it doesn't seem like she has a choice, but she also doesn't make a choice throughout the movie. So.
Well, I mean, we say she doesn't make a choice, but, you know, her passivity, has felt weird to me this whole time, because, you know, the choice to not participate in the counter revolution or whatever was a choice. She was like, I got to protect my kids. Like, I can't get involved with it. And her, you know, passivity, I guess you would say, or like decision to say, walk away from like transcribing her father's speech and go visit the Jewish ghetto, which is what she did, and like see the people that her dad hated so much, like there was something inside of her that was making, that was like setting her to action. And so it's like, I wouldn't say it's like passivity, just is a little.
Okay, but here's what I'll say. As a woman, I feel like men and women have different ideas of what choice is, because in a lot of ways, I don't think women have, were allowed to have choices. Like, I just think our relationship in all of these scenarios, I don't think she had a choice. Like, what is the choice?
Well, the kind of the repercussions of those choices are like really damaging.
They're so extreme.
And, yeah.
Yes.
Well, maybe yeah. that's it. I mean, maybe it's just all of that. It's like the lack of agency as a woman, the choices that she has had to make that felt like she was backed into a corner, like the regrets, the guilt. Like, to me, it's kind of like that world in which she exists, which is so dehumanizing, that allows her to come to a place at the end of the film where she's just like, this life is not really worth living for me.
Right. Right.
I can make this final decision to like end all of this because there's like no,
wow.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I hear what you guys are saying. I mean, so where do you want to go with it then?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think we can take Hitler and the Nazis off the board. That's sure. for sure.
Okay.
Maybe we take the state of psychology in 1940s America.
Hitler and the Nazis yeah. could just be on every board.
Yeah.
Wait. What should be on every board? Sorry.
Hitler and the Nazis. Hitler and the Nazis.
Yeah. They show up a lot.
If there's an opportunity to blame, they should. Yeah.
We should always take it. Yeah.
It's like
some of the boards are prefabricated. They're all all have the top two selections.
Capitalism, patriarchy, Hitler and the Nazis.
It's like Wheel of Fortune where you at the end and you're doing like final thing and R-S-T-L-N-E is like always the letters.
Yes,
like we just always have Hitler and the Nazis and capitalism on our board. Everything's off.
Going forward, that's how we should start the boards. Yeah.
All right, we got to do this. We're running long.
We do.
So
we are so long here. Holocaust.
Can we pick three?
Yeah. Yes.
Sure. We can give a backhand. We've done that before.
My votes are dehumanizing women, dangers of passivity, people as collateral damage for power.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what about the Nazis? They have to be included somehow.
Well, they're all part of that,
right?
The Nazis exist because of using people as collateral damage for power.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
That sort of rings true to me. I think that I mean,
yeah.
So how about this? How about we throw in the alarmist jail? The Nazis' use of people as collateral power for damage, collateral damage for power.
Okay.
We throw in jail dehumanizing women, and we slap passivity.
I wouldn't say it's just the Nazis using people as collateral damage for power, because it's also using women as collateral damage for power.
Okay. But they fold into that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So what do you think about that? What do you think about slapping passivity? I mean, in a way, I kind of like that because it, you know, a slap is so physical. It kind of like shakes you. Up.
Yeah.
It's a wake up call.
Yeah.
It's a wait. Yeah.
I like it.
That's good.
Okay. We're going to have to call it.
Okay.
The dangers of passivity. You're getting the big slap. People as collateral damage for power and dehumanizing women, you're going to the alarmist jail.
Lock them up.
That's a life sentence, baby.
That's right. No recreation time for you.
Mm-hmm. No.
No chance for parole.
No. And we have a robust healing and rehabilitation program in our mm-hmm. in our jail.
Yeah, to be clear, we're all abolitionists, but
mm-hmm.
right.
Here's the thing, though. Right. They tend to escape. So we're gonna have to keep an eye on them because they always get out.
They are persistent.
This is not good. Hannah, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us get to the bottom of who's to blame for Sophie's choice. I mean, heavy. Huge, epic. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have done it without you.
This was a big one. Thanks, gang. Thanks for making me watch that 2.5 hour long movie.
In the aftermath, Sophie's Choice was ranked number one in Roger Ebert's top 10 list of 1982 and was listed on AFI's 100 Years, 100 Movies at number
91. The Alarmist is now on Patreon. Subscribe and get ad-free content along with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/thealarmist or check out the link in our show description. Visit our website, www.thealarmistpodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram, @thealarmistpodcast, and on Twitter, @alarmistthe. You can also send us your thoughts via email to thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com. Today's episode was produced and engineered by Clayton Early, with editing by Molly Hockey, and fact-checking by Chris Smith. Thank you to our associate producer and researcher, Crystal Dinsberg. The Alarmist is executive produced by Rebecca Delgado-Smith. Tune in next week. We'll be discussing the Banana Massacre. The Alarmist.
Powered by Acast.
Hey there. Looking to level up your shopping experience? Let me introduce you to Amazon Live. If you haven't heard, it's a shoppable video experience where influencers and creators showcase the latest must-haves all while you shop in real time. And for those who love some celeb gossip, reality stars like Kyle Richards, Lala Kent, and friend of the pod, Paige DeSorbo. On her new show, In Bed with Paige DeSorbo, Paige invites top-tier guests to cozy up in her fluffy bed where they spill secrets, share nighttime routines, and even whip up midnight snacks. Stream and shop new episodes of her series, In Bed with Paige DeSorbo, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. ET by going to amazon.com/live/Paige_DeSorbo. Or you can watch Amazon Live's new live TV channel on Freevee or Prime Video under the DIY section and shop along on your phone.
This is a mini meditation guided by Bombas. Repeat after me. I'm comfy. Comfy. I'm cozy. Cozy. I have zero blisters on my toes. Blisters. And that's because I wear Bombas, the softest socks, underwear, and t-shirts that give back. One purchased equals one donated. Now go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST at checkout.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Fall is here, and if you want to sleep in the coziest bed imaginable, you have to start with Boll & Branch's best-selling 100% organic cotton sheets. You'll spend every night wrapped in buttery, breathable softness, and you'll feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with Boll & Branch's 30-night guarantee. Plus, for a limited time, get 20% off and free shipping on your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.